Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're back with a very fun game to talk about this week, and I think we're all excited that it's 90 minutes of fun that we can discuss. Before that, don't forget to leave us a five-star review on iTunes or Spotify, because much like Tottenham Hotspur, we deserve a pat on the head this week. And you can also follow us on Twitter at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. Now that's out of the way, it's time to introduce my co-host for this week. Starting us off, Hark! Doth mine eyes deceive me? Is that Milord Brian Ashlock fresh from the Ren Fair?
Yep, sure is. Thine eyes do not deceiveth thou and shit.
Did you have any fine mutton? Did you sample any of your lord's finest ales? How did it go?
I had a ton of beer. And I had a giant pork tenderloin sandwich, which is the most Indiana I've ever been. But it was great. I had a wonderful time.
Indiana Renaissance.
Yep.
Is that before or after Bob Knight? How exactly does that work?
Yeah, I feel like the Bob Knight is both, you know, the high period and also the dark ages in a way. So it's hard to really evaluate that. Yeah.
And next up, coming to us fresh from the Oscars, it's just Ben. How are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm Ben Uff. Yeah, great time at Hollywood's Biggest Night. Saw all the stars.
Were Spurs Ben Uff for you this week?
They were.
Can't believe it took us like a year to use that awful joke. And by us, I mean me. Yes, well, we have a very fun game to talk about this week. And if you put your manly hand in mine, we'll talk about it together. So Tottenham Hotspur played Aston Villa in, like, I don't know, maybe the best game of the Ange Postecoglou era. Brian, how satisfying was this for you as, you know, you recovered from the Black Death?
Yeah, it was really satisfying to play such an important part in Aston Villa's biggest game in recent memory. I think just being present for the occasion was always going to be like enough that these players would always remember this game. And then to go out there and then get four goals and get John McGinn sent off was just, you know, it was all icing on the cake at that point. But seriously, like, you're right, it was a very good performance. I think the first half is really forgettable. But we absolutely went out there and smushed them in a way that I feel like Ben said either in our writer's room or on Slack or on this show last week that we just don't do to teams.
Yeah, I was bemoaning specifically how Aston Villa do, you know, that I don't think they're necessarily better than us, but they do manage to really hammer teams sometimes. So having that finally happen for us against our arch rivals, Aston Villa, felt pretty good.
I think what was so impressive to me about this performance was that it was such an assured performance and what was shaping up to be such, you know, I mean, like Brian said, the biggest game in Aston Villa's history or whatever McGinn called it. But it was an important inflection point for this season. And I think, you know, there'd been a lot of people sort of bigging up Aston Villa before this game. And even putting that aside, this was obviously an important game for the race for top four. You know, but to come into such, like, I think this was a high pressure game. I think this was important. And I think that we came out there and not only played this well, but played our game so well. I mean, we didn't tweak much. I mean, I think we made some adjustments and I think we performed really well. But like Aston Villa completely changed the way they played, in an attempt to counter us, which I think was foolish, but we'll get into that. But I just think that we did our thing so well in such a high leverage game on the road against a team that we're competing with directly for Champions League spots this year. I just thought it was a really impressive performance from Spurs, who really sort of rose to the occasion in a way that, you know, I don't want to say they haven't done this year, but it was just so comprehensive that it was like, I can't help but be impressed by it. All Brian.
Already muted.
he's relearning how to use technology. It's been, inoculations, microphones.
Yeah, there's no microphones in the Renaissance era. I think it was especially good to have this performance on the road, because we just haven't had that many strong performances against good teams on the road, and we haven't gotten a lot. You know, the biggest team we've beaten away from home so far this year, before Villa was, I can't even remember. I think they said on the broadcast that all of our wins away from home have come against teams in the bottom six or seven spots of the Premier League.
We played Arsenal really well away from home.
Sure, but we didn't win. So, you know, I think, you know, like you said, this is a rival for a top four spot. This is a team that everybody has been praising. And to just kind of go out there and impose our will on the game is a really encouraging sign.
Yeah, it looks like Palace is the best team we've beaten on the road this season. Or Bournemouth, I guess, depending on where things stand at the moment. It's not been great. Aston Villa is a team that we played really, really well the first time around and were unfortunate in how that game went. I don't know why they decided to come out in that back five and try and neutralize us. It did work, but it also meant they were never going to do anything either. Once things opened up in the second half, it was just totally one-way traffic.
Nathan Clark talked a lot about this on the Extra Inch this week and in previous weeks. You know, these teams play a low block against us, are relatively successful in keeping us from doing anything. And then, presumably, because they have some level of professional pride, they try to play a little bit and it all goes horribly wrong for them, which I think is a credit to Ange and sort of the system he built. The teams are having to react like this to us. But it is like, you know, you look, especially a team like Villa, it's like, it's hard to do that for 90 minutes. I mean, Wolves got away with it, but, you know, between like Spurs attacking talent and just, you know, like you're not giving yourself a lot of chances if you play the way Villa did. I know their plan was we're going to get Watkins and Bailey to sort of test our center backs and see what happens, but it wasn't working. I mean, it didn't work at all in the first half, except for that one time Bissouma mislaid that pass across our back line. But, you know, it didn't really work. And it's just like, that's such a hard system, you know, just playing like that against any halfway decent team is, you know, that requires a lot of concentration. You're not creating anything going forward. And that's just difficult. And I think, like, I don't know, like, I haven't watched a ton of Villa this year, but, and I know this isn't how they always play, but, like, I mean, watching this, my overriding thought, even in the first half, was like, is this it? Is this all they've got? Because it's like, this is, you know, even accounting for they just played Ajax, they're probably a little tired, they're trying to manage their minutes. Like, even accounting for that, this is a very uninspired performance. I would not be happy if Spurs did this to a team of a similar caliber to us. Like, I would not be happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of in Villa's defense, like, they do counter well. Watkins is, you know, one of the top scorers in the league this year. They have dangerous guys who can get free and get in behind. We just happen to have the luxury of having two very good center backs and Mickey van de Ven, who's the fastest man alive, that kind of snuffed that out. And I think they were, you know, as the second half proved, they were right to be a little cautious, because if they had committed more men forward and, you know, tried to press us further up the pitch and try and play a full field game, we're dangerous too.
But it felt like, to me, and I'm oversimplifying things to extent here, but broadly speaking, it felt like to me, Emery looked at that first game that we played saw that when he tightened things up in the second half, it kind of worked out for them and thought, well, I'll just do that again. And I know it's more complicated than that, but, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know if I was Emery and I looked at that first game against Spurs, and I would hope a Spurs manager would look at a game like I would hope Ange would look at the Liverpool game, for instance, and with clear eyes like this. You know, if I was Emery, I'd like to think, if I was a Villa fan, I'd like to think Emery would look at that first Spurs game and think, like, boy, I got away with one there, and not think that's a formula for success, because, I mean, they were incredibly lucky to win that game. Like you said, we beat the brakes off them early, and they were, I think, very fortunate to score the goals they did in that game. I mean, I don't think that's a formula for success, and it felt to me, again, broadly speaking, like he was trying to duplicate that across the whole match, and that seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about Emery is he is a very good knockout manager. He's very good in that, you know, cup format where he can, you know, tweak things to the opposition and cause teams trouble. And instead of playing his game and forcing other teams to adapt to him. And I think, you know, that kind of betrays, like, a little bit about where Aston Villa really is in relation to us as a club, that they aren't in a place where they're confident that they're going to go out there and just play their game for 90 minutes and make us beat them. You know, they got too cute and tried to do too much to counter us rather than be confident in their setup. Which I think if this game had been like a fast, you know, stretched pitch shootout kind of game, like, I like their chances in that.
Well, I like their chances better than what we saw, certainly.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we played the way we play, and, you know, I think it helped that our front line had their best games in a while. You know, whether there's a chicken and egg in that, I don't know, but, you know, Brennan Johnson was very, very dangerous, consistently. Kulishevsky, quiet first half, but a fantastic second half, and Sun was lights out. And, like, we just haven't gotten that from those guys.
Well, Madison's, but I mean, you watch that game back, even in the first half, it wasn't quite coming off. Madison was creating these killer through balls that, like, they kept almost finding guys. I mean, I think, you know, I think there's this story of this game where Villa opens it up in the second half, and that's where they get killed. And that's, again, broadly true, but, you know, Spurs were asking questions, if that's the cliche we want to use, all day, and Villa just did not have much in the way of answers. I mean, I think they were, you know, we didn't create really any great chances in the first half, but we were constantly being dangerous. It was one of the few times, I think, where I don't think the sort of, like, the XG or the even the shots really reflected sort of what was going on in the first half. I mean, Spurs were causing problems for Villa, and Villa was lucky that, I mean, Madison had sort of two through balls in particular that I'm thinking of, and Villa was lucky that we didn't really get a shot off there because he was putting them in dangerous positions. And, you know, they were just, I don't know, it felt like a very naive performance from Villa to me, and I was led to believe that they were a better team than this. Brian?
I mean, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say, I think you're giving our performance in the first half a little bit more credit than I thought it deserved. I thought the first half was pretty much a throwaway half. And honestly, some of the best chances I thought in that half came to Villa. And, you know, Watkins had a couple of good opportunities on the counter. And, you know, yeah, they, you know, our center backs played great, and they did a pretty good job of you know, forcing the player wide or dispossessing them, but they were getting into the box. They were making dangerous runs. And, you know, for all our possession, I felt like we were kind of impotent. Like, it took us until like the 44th minute to get even a shot on goal. And, you know, it felt like one of those games where we're playing, you know, a lower table side, and they're determined to kind of camp and sit back, and, like, we just still don't have the ability to break them down. And, you know, I think a lot of that is still also due to, you know, the front three is still gelling. Like, we don't have a focal point in Richarlison the way we did at some points earlier in the season. And Madison is still coming back to full fitness. I thought this was definitely his best performance that he's had since he came back from injury. Mm-hmm. But even that, there's still a little rust. there in terms of you know, him picking out the right pass in that first half. But you know, I think none of that really matters, because then in the second half we looked amazing, and just like we had looked back in August and September. And I'd rather, you know, talk about that part.
But I just, real quick, I just think you're not wrong, you're not wrong in terms of how you're describing the half in general, but I do feel like this did not feel as dangerous as some of these other teams we played that did that. I did not, even like, and I know Palace didn't create anything against us, but like, I felt better about what we were doing in this game in the first half than I did in that first half against Palace, because at least we were moving the ball. I mean, we weren't creating chances, you're right, but like, we were getting in dangerous areas. We were doing things that looked like an idea that could develop into something. And it seemed like again, saying one neat trick might be a little unfair to Villa, but it didn't, you know, like, it felt to me like, oh, well, if Villa makes something happen, it's going to be because, like, you know, Basuma loses the ball right outside our box or something like that. Not because of what they were doing was working particularly well.
I mean, I think that's kind of the problem, though, with our sort of sterile possession mode of play, is that when we're not creating great chances, when we do make those mistakes and we do give teams the opportunity to hit us on a counter, and Villa did, and, like, you know, they were much closer to scoring in that first half than we were. Like Brian said, we had one shot, they had like five or six. You know, their expected goals were like about almost one. You know, they could have stolen it right then and there, and then we're in the exact same position we've been in a lot of other games, where we're like, well, we had all the ball, we didn't create anything, we got sucker punched, now we got to dig ourselves out of a hole. And like, we might have.
I guess what I'm saying is this felt better managed than those games. Is how I'm going on vibes here, but like, watching that match, that first half felt better managed than the other games. But like Brian said, first half is what it is. The second half was really fucking good.
Yeah, let's talk about the fun part.
Let's talk about that. I want to start with hats off to someone. I want to do hats off to Pape Matessar, because he was fucking incredible. And it's like, he's such a weird player because he's everywhere. He doesn't look as fast as he is. And I don't know if that's because he's so leggy or what, but like, God, he's everywhere, just cleaning up possession, creating chance. God, what a player he is. I mean, that cross to Madison for the first goal is incredible. Like, those defenders weren't doing anything wrong. Sarr just puts that on a plate for Madison. It is a perfect pass. And, you know, Madison deserves a lot of credit, too. That's a hard finish, and he fucking nails it. But, God, Sarr was doing that all game, where he was just, you know, oh, we lost the ball, well, Sarr's there to collect it. Oh, we need to move it forward, well, here he is dribbling or making a nice pass. Like, he is just such a good player. And I thought, obviously, you know, you watched that Milan game last year, and there's clearly a player there. He's so good. And I don't know if he's the best player on the team, but I feel like he's the player of the season, just because, like, who thought he was this good coming into this year? He's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that whole build-up for that goal is just really nice. I mean, you've got Deki dribbling in some guys. You've got a nice little wall pass with Pedro Porro. You've got and then you've got Sarr kind of just grabbing it and taking it down the wing. And, you know, there's no other central midfielder on our team that can, with the exception of maybe Madison, I guess, they can play that cross. Like, you know, Højbjerg, Bentancourt, Lo Celso, even in that position, like that, like, he's at pace running and just absolutely whips that ball in perfectly. And I mean, it's just so good. It's just absolutely so good. And, you know, just in terms of the team, in the build up to that goal, like, that is absolutely what we want to see. We get deep possession just outside our own box. We transition quickly, move the ball up the field, and then bang, cross into the box, goal. And like, it was just a really beautiful move.
Yeah, the combination between the players is really something that we've been lacking, you know, especially while Sarr was out. But having that midfield run into space you know, ahead of Kulusevski and Porro, you know, that they draw the defenders out as they're combining, and Sarr just has the field to run into. And, you know, yes, he did phenomenally with the ball after the fact, but we just weren't getting those sort of like overlapping runs out of midfield, which is like a key part of the structure that, you know, Ange has. It's why the fullbacks move into the middle so that the center midfielders can, you know, join that front line. And that's the thing that when he's done it so well.
And I think that's like a real thing that is indicative of what a successful player in this system is like, do you have the, not only the ability to make that run into space, but do you have the awareness and tactical knowledge of when to do that? Because, you know, look, we've got players like Bentancur, for example, who is an amazing midfielder and he does so many good things. But like, his preference is still to kind of hang in space in midfield. And he doesn't have that same natural inclination to make the run beyond where, you know, the winger or and the fullback are taking up their positions. And like, it's not just for midfielders. Like, that's something that our two best fullbacks are really good at. Like, you know, are the central midfielder and the winger, like, you know, further back on the pitch? Okay, well, they can, now the fullback can make that run. You know, now the winger can make that run. Now, even Christian Romero and Mickey van de Ven can make that run, like, if the space is there. And that, I think, is my favorite thing about Sarr specifically, but one of the other reasons why he makes this work. Because, you know, Madison is willing to make that run as well, but he is still more the, like, kind of sit in space and have the ball played to feet so that he can then make that next pass. And when you have two guys sitting in midfield doing that, you kind of gum up the works. And, you know, Sarr just, like, he uses his athleticism to great effect in that
moment. It helps that, like, the players that Sarr has to combine with on that side make that easy. Porro and Kulusevski are two of the best passers on the ball. They're very good at finding that through ball. Whereas Madison is a little bit on an island with either Timo or Brennan, and Udogi, who, for all of his strengths, is not the guy who's making that early pass into space. And so Madison, as a result, ends up having to sort of sit and dictate and can't always, you know, overlap into the box the way, you know, he should and is effective at when he does. But yeah, the three of those guys on the right just are such a great little triangle. And, you know, I liked having Kulusevski be able to play in that Sarr role. I think he is probably our second best option for that because he plays that position similarly to Sarr, but when he's there, he's not on the right. And then you kind of lose what makes that whole axis so dynamic.
He's also not as fast as Sarr, which, like, I mean, right. You could actually see this once or twice in the game where, like, Kulusevski was, like, going for that loose ball. And he actually got there a few times. But, like, I'm just always amazed because Sarr just always gets to the ball when it's loose or when there's a pass made. And he just, like I said, it's probably because he's just so tall, but he doesn't look fast, you know, in the way that like a Pedro Porro does when he's sort of moving at full pelt. But yeah, he's just always there. And it felt like he was just mopping up possession all day in a way that was like, you know, like every time I feel like every time I watch Sarr when he just hasn't been in the team for a minute, it's just like, oh God, did we miss this? Like, it's just, you don't sort of realize exactly what you have there until he's not there. But really just an incredible performance, I thought, from him. You know, we were just talking about it there. Ben and Brian were just talking about it. Our fullbacks were back, and I think both had their best game in a minute, particularly Udogi. Just really assured, did not get into any trouble. Well, I guess he got in some trouble, but it wasn't his fault. But, you know, really
encourage people to get into trouble is really
good. Which is what you want. Love his reaction to McGinn's challenge, which is, I'm going to get up and scream and fight you. Oh, wait, I need to get you sent off. I'm going to fall over. But yeah, I thought he looked back to his best self in this game. I thought he looked, you know, for a guy who's been a little off the pace lately, he looked really good. And I think, you know, it's easy to forget. He's very young. This is his first year in England. Like, this is to be expected that he might you know, have some off games, but they look back to themselves. And I think, you know, it showed, like, you know, like in terms of how well we played, that our fullbacks were doing the things we need them to do.
Yeah, it makes such a big difference having these guys and having like Emerson and Ben Davis out there. It's just night and day.
The other, I thought, performance that really struck me in this game was Son is really good at playing in that center forward role. And he's doing such a good job at bringing other people into play. In particular, on Johnson's goal, the second, I thought he did such a good job at delaying his pass to Johnson to take some of Villa's defenders out of play on that. He's like, I don't want to say that, like, he's better than Richarlison, because I think they offer different things, but I think he's better there than he is on the left at this point. And he does such a good job. I don't know if you can get them both on the pitch at the same time, which is maybe less of a problem next year than it is this year, but I really like Son playing in that center forward role. I mean, he's so clinical, and now he's doing such a good job of just interacting with everyone around him. It's just, I was very happy with how he played in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was pretty good. I think there were definitely times where, you know, having a center forward who's more of a focal point that you can, you know, use to hold the ball up and play guys in behind, like, might have been useful at points in this game. But like, everything Son did on the ball and his movement off the ball was really good. You know, he had options either side on the assist that he makes for the Johnson goal. He could have played it to Kulusevski, he could have played it to Johnson, like, and he did seem to just delay a second to make that Villa defender commit before playing the pass. And, you know, both guys on either side made good decisions to hold their runs so that he could make that pass. And then he gets a goal for himself, and, you know, it's good. He's been really good. And, you know, it's a great problem to have if we have both him and Richarlison playing well and scoring goals. Like, you know, obviously we're moneyballing Harry Kane. We're recreating him in the aggregate. And to do that, you need both those guys to score goals. So, he's been really good lately.
And, you know, it also helps that we finally seem to have Brennan and Timo chipping in fairly regularly. And, you know, if these guys are cooking too. And, you know, we talked a lot earlier in the year about how few players were contributing to the goal load that Son was carrying, and then Richarlison stepped up and whatever, and now the floodgates are kind of starting to open. You know, Johnson has, you know, 3 goals in the last month or so and a couple assists to go with it. Timo now has his second goal in as many games. Like, we're getting to a point where we have real questions about who should play, and you know, real options on the bench, and, you know, good problems to have where everybody is starting a fire.
I mean, you know, Ben, is there anyone capable of displacing big Brennan Johnson?
You know, it's hard to say.
I mean, all that man does is get assists and goals at this point, right?
It's really true. He is starting to turn it on. I thought he was very effective on the left during the game. You know, we've seen him play both sides of the pitch, and he looks like a very different player on either side. And I don't know. I never know when Son's fit and Richarlison's fit, is he the guy who should play with him on the right, or does Richarlison make way for Son to go up top and Brennan plays on the left? I don't know. I don't know any of these answers, but he is starting to come good in a meaningful way and in a consistent way. He was even taking guys on this mismatch, which is the thing that I have constantly dinged him for. So he's just not effective with players in front of him. And I don't know if that's a product of him playing on the left with his, you know, as a right-footed player, and, you know, the way the pitch is oriented, or if, you know, Ange has just been yelling at him for a while and he finally got the message. But
I mean, I do think, yeah. I mean, he's a young player, so I think there is a tendency in this statistically driven era to just assume guys are finished or close to finished products when they come. And obviously, like, if you don't know how to dribble guys, that does tend not to be a skill you develop. But, you know, he is a young player, and I think there probably is something to be said for that guy was, like, starting every game for Spurs because of the injury crisis. There are a lot of games. I think he was probably playing in the starting 11 a little more often than we anticipated this year. And, you know, I think there's maybe something to be said for, like, that guy got to sit on the bench for a little bit, and it took some of the pressure off, and he was able to sort of, like, reassess parts of his game. And I don't know. Like, I mean, he's growing as a player, I think, and getting more comfortable in terms of what Ange wants him to do. And, you know, if he is going to develop like this, I think it speaks very well of him. It speaks very well of Spurs. It speaks very well of Ange. You know, I mean, I long may it continue, because he's been – he has certain limitations as a player, which can be very frustrating, but I think his productivity really can't be disputed at this point. And certainly I think there's been improvement over the year that is encouraging.
I think my only issue with him playing on the left is that generally he's not as good a crosser from that position. And, like, you know, him getting, he doesn't really get to the byline and cut it back in a way that you would expect, you know, a right footer playing on the left. Obviously he's more of a goal threat when he's on the right, because he's able to cut inside, or on the left because he's able to cut inside on his right. But, like, you know, there were a couple opportunities in the first half where he had the opportunity to kind of get in behind and play a ball across, and the end product is not quite as good on that side. To me, I think he's probably better suited to play on the right more, with Son or Timo on the left. You know, the results in this game were totally fine. Like, he wasn't the reason why that first half was not, you know, joined up, and why we weren't creating chances. But, like, I just think overall, you know, the idea has to be that he plays on the right more frequently.
So it's funny, we were talking about this in our writer Slack today, and friend of the pod, Joel, broke down his minutes based on whether he was on the left or on the right. And there is a, you know, as you would expect, a very clear difference in the kinds of performances he has. When he's on the left, he has, you know, 3 shots a game instead of less than 2. His expected goals go up from 0.2 to 0.5. So, you know, he becomes a much clearer shooting and goal threat, but his key passes drop from 1.5 to 0.5. His expected assists go from 0.2 to 0. You know, he's clearly on the right, he is a much better facilitator than he is on the left. And on the left, he's a much better goal threat. And, you know, knowing that that is, you know, what you're going to get out of him depending on where you play him, I think that makes it kind of easy to sort of see what we need in a given match and where he's suited based on the players around him. It would be nice if he wasn't so one-footed and could do a little more of the other thing on both sides. That would certainly make him a more dynamic and useful player. But, you know, it is very interesting how clear his one-footedness manifests in the way he plays.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be, I mean, he's clearly developed in terms of how he's been used this year, so maybe that'll be something he learned. I mean, God, if it's just that clear, maybe it's just going to be, you know, like you said, Ben, like, the coaching staff's just going to understand, okay, what do we need today? Do we need a goal scorer? Do we need someone who's going to facilitate? Or, you know, even, like, you know, the clear, maybe something a little clearly could be shifted around during a game. So it's interesting. But I think he's proving to be a more productive player than maybe some of us gave him credit for, Ben, earlier in the season. So it's nice to see him finishing these kind of chances, because I thought that was a very well-taken goal.
It was. And I never said he wasn't productive. He's just not well-rounded. I mean, at any rate, my man of the match is still...
Continue to defend yourself. I'm interested to see what else you think you didn't say about it.
Is your man of the match Timo Werner for scoring what must be the most instinctive finish of his career in England?
Man, I really feel like that guy overthinks things way too much.
not on Sunday, he didn't.
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
my man just has Kulusevski. He was at the heart of our first three goals. They don't happen without him. Obviously, everybody else around him did well, but he was the guy making all that stuff tick. And
he was picking Villa's pocket all day. I mean, it's to a point. I know, like, Villa are frauds, and, you know, Business Casual Dracula isn't actually a good manager, but, like, it did make me want. We were doing it so much. I'm like, God, why don't we do this more often? Because we were just stealing the Kulusevski in particular. Was just stealing the ball off of them in their final third, all certainly throughout the entire second half.
It reminded me of Pete Christian Eriksen, like under Pochettino. That was, he would do that in the press all the time, and also have the tools to pick that next pass. And that to me is what Kulusevski looked like, picking their pockets. And, yeah,
and Eriksen didn't have that dump truck to throw around back there either. So.
That's right.
No, he did. He did a really good job. I mean, you know, in, especially in advance of his love letter to Spurs fans this week, he did a really good job. Not just like exactly kind of like what you said about Eriksen. It wasn't maybe as impressive as what Eriksen would do, but like when he picked Villa's pockets, he did a very good job of like the next decision. He set them up to score. I mean, he created that second goal. I think he directly created the third goal. I mean, just doing a very good job. I thought one of the funniest moments of the match, and probably the moment where I lost whatever minimal amount of respect I had for Villa, was I think it was right before he created his goal for Son in like the 90th minute, where he stole the, where him and who else was it? Was it Sarr? I can't remember. But they stole the ball off Villa, and Moreno and Zaniolo both like just gave up. They like threw their hands in the air as like Kulusevski's dribbling towards the goal. It's like the most, just, I don't know. I would be so furious at two Spurs players who did that, even if we were down by two goals. Like, they just completely gave up on the play. Just wonderful to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, are we also going to talk about the amazing Højbjerg dribble?
Yeah,
we can. I mean, if we're giving, I just credit feel to like people we don't give enough credit to.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like he's now a future Ballon d'Or winner because he just rolled two guys in Villa's midfield and then, you know, created a chance that didn't come anywhere near the goal. But, you know, I think if we're going to talk about great dribbling performances, the true master of his craft, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, has to be recognized. It's only fair.
Future Juventus legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was you talk about the Villa players giving up, like, for a team who, you know, hyped up that this was the biggest match in recent history, etc. The mental collapse we saw from them was really something to behold. Like, that red card was so stupid. Like, just no attempt at the ball, just mean and violent. And, you know, Villa fans are mad. They're like, it's just a foul.
Oh, you
know,
okay.
But it was like you know, it was the kind of foul that should be a red card if it isn't always a red card. Like, it was so cynical and so egregious and, like, very forceful. And for Mr. John McGinn, who was the one, you know, saying, you know, what an important game it was. But then after that, they just heads dropped everywhere. They were no longer in that match.
I gotta say, I felt like they were out of the match the second Johnson scored that goal. Like, McGinn felt like the only player who was up for it. I mean, maybe because he's the only player who realizes, like, you know, how sorry Villa's recent history has been. But, like, he felt like the only guy who came in ready to play. And I'm probably being unfair, but they looked tired. They didn't look like they were ready for a fight, and we did. Like.
And I mean, of course, the Irishman was ready for a fight, but, you know, isn't
he Scottish
on that play?
Yep. He is definitely Scottish.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Same thing. Okay, whatever. Right. Whatever. They're the same people that live in Ireland and Scotland. You two are the same.
In case anyone don't ask me about Northern Ireland, I'm not gonna get into that. Brian is from Florida, so if you're wondering why he can't be bothered to learn about your national cultures, that is why. Brian, continue.
I just think it's American, not Floridian necessarily.
Oh, it's worse in Florida, but yeah.
Definitely, yeah. Everything about America is worse in Florida. I think that's universally true. What was I saying? Oh, so Udogie is just like dribbling into an inordinate amount of space on that play. There are two men higher up the, or, you know, behind him that are not making any attempt to close him down. The fullback and the central defender not making any attempt to close him down, or instead attempting to run back. And McGinn comes from the center of the field to, like, at least make an attempt to close him down. So, like, if we're going to give him any credit, like you said, he was still trying in a way that no one else was. But everything else about that play, like Ben said, was dirty, was cynical. Like, it's absolutely a red card 100% of the time. Like, to stand there after the fact and be like, what are you talking about? What did I do? I'm like, it's, come on.
The best thing about that. The best thing about that play is if you go back and watch it, I think as soon as the foul gets called, the fans start singing the John McGinn song, and which I think is like it's like the Dally Alley song. And as they're singing it, the referee pulls out the red card, and the volume on the song just like as soon as the red card comes out, the volume just drops precipitously. And it's very funny if you go back and watch the clip, because you know they're very proud of their player. I mean, and he was like, McGinn was the only guy who looked like he was up for it, and unfortunately he was a little too up for it. But that was like that's a red card all day. I don't understand how you can dispute that. If a Spurs player did that, I would obviously be angry they got sent off, but I would be pretty angry at that Spurs player for not rising to the occasion. Like, I mean, you can't. Like I said, I think Villa like looked totally out of that game. They did not look like they were up for reeling in a Spurs team that was up 2-0 at that point, but like McGinn just eliminated any chance of that happening kicked Udogie like
and
that.
And even then, like, you know, it's especially inexcusable when you consider like the run of games that they have next and what they're trying to accomplish. Like, now he misses out on the Manchester City match. You know, they're not, you know, we're still behind them in the table. Yes, we have a game in hand, but like they're still, you know, in a position where fourth is reasonable. And then now to do 30% of the last bit of the Premier League season without, you know, your captain and your best midfield player, or one of your better midfield players, like that's not ideal for that team. And that's certainly not, you know, what you want the leader of the team and the guy talking about the most important game in Villa recent history to be doing. When you're down 2-0 and like it doesn't even matter at that point, you know, like there's just no need for that.
It's just how the Irish play the game, I guess.
Yeah, I've been told he's Scottish, actually. I don't know if you know.
Same thing.
No, they're two very different cultures that have their own accent, and they prepare potatoes in different ways. So,
all right, just kidding.
No more Ren fairs for you, bro. No more Ren fairs for you. Just picked up that casual racism all there.
That's Florida.
Oh, right. Well, fair enough.
The other thing we have to contend with, to get this back on track, is we are now once again without Mickey Van de Ven, because we can't ever have a fully fit team. It's always one man back, one man goes out, seems like.
Well, it was funny because I thought if there was one bright side to him going out, it was like, okay, well, we're going to see what Dragusin is able to do. And then Villa promptly folded like a house of cards, and you know, he was fine, but like I don't feel like I gained anything intelligent to say about him or learn about him as a player beyond like, well, he didn't fuck it up, which is, you know, something. I thought he was all right, but I mean, Villa just completely collapsed as soon as he entered the game. Maybe they were so scared of his top knot that they, you know, Villa just like, that's what made Villa wilt. Like they saw that top knot and didn't want any piece of it. But I don't know. It's nice that we have another actual center back in the team, and we're not going to have to be like, you know, forced to put like Emerson or Davies or whoever as a center back.
Yeah, I think to Ben's point about the, you know, we can never have everybody healthy or, you know, one in, one out sort of situation. At least, like you said, this time we're replacing Van de Ven, however long he may be out for, which I don't think we know yet, on Tuesday night in America. But like we're replacing him with a guy who is a legitimate center back who has played there, you know, extensively throughout his career. And, you know, he looked fine. He got a yellow card. He had that one kind of bad giveaway shortly after coming on, but like, I don't know. I mean, if Van de Ven is going to miss a couple of games, I feel a little bit better about this than I did about, you know, him go when he went out early in the season.
I mean, that's what we bought him for, right? Just like we needed that cover, and that's a much better position to be in.
The rumors as we record this are that Van de Ven should be back after the international break, but like, I think this is like, I mean, Van de Ven's a big dude who runs a lot. I think, you know, soft tissue injuries are just going to be a fact of life with this guy. So we better have like 3 to 4 center backs who we trust. You know, I think if we're going to play with him, hopefully, especially if we're going to be in Europe next year. So we'll see.
Well, lucky for us, Arsenal snuck past Porto in the Champions League to improve our coefficient chances for fifth place getting the Champions League spot.
Maybe. I would love to feel like Spurs would ever fit, like handle a set of penalties as well as Arsenal did today. That was so annoying. I don't know. Fuck. I would almost rather really let's see England lose that fifth spot, us finish fourth, and Villa be stuck in the Europa League next year. How about that? Let's do that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
How confident are you guys in finishing a Champions League spot after this match, Ben?
I mean, I feel good. I felt good before the match. You know, we're getting healthy at a good time, you know, despite losing Van de Ven. We still have a few games left in our favorable run where we can put some points together before we hit that gauntlet of Liverpool, City, and Arsenal. And inevitably, you know, the Chelsea match is going to be rescheduled right smack in the middle of that. And, you know, that's going to be the real test. But for now, you know, we just keep doing what we're doing. And Villa has to play all those guys also. I think not in the same run, but, you know, they're waiting for them. So I don't think, you know, United is going to play spoiler. I think it's, you know, still down to the two of us. And, you know, right now, you know, we control our destiny, you know, so I think we got it.
And you know, putting aside who we can play at left back, we also are in the driver's seat of who's going to finish in fourth this year.
Right. When we win out, it's not going to matter what Villa does.
I don't know about you guys, but certainly I'm probably reading too much into it. I was very unimpressed by Villa. And like, if I'll probably eat these words, but I'm like, if that's our competition, I feel pretty good about finishing in a Champions League spot this year.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think they're better than this game. You know, I think we're better than our worst game also.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think their attackers didn't play great. And I think, you know, on another day, they convert one of those early chances in the game. And maybe it's a little bit different. But yeah, I don't think that changes how I feel about our chances for top five or Champions League qualification. I think, like Ben said, you know, we're in the driver's seat. And while I don't think we're going to necessarily win out, I feel pretty confident that, you know, we have enough easy matches both before and after that kind of really difficult stretch in April and early May that we can, you know, take top four and
win the league.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's not out of the question yet, technically.
Yeah, all this stuff is going around about how, oh, Spurs are going to decide the title race by, you know, who we might beat in that run of Liverpool, Arsenal, and City. And, you know, the reality is we just need to beat all of them and then win the league ourselves.
Yes, yes. Beat all of
them.
That is their fucking problem. Yeah, I think I would love nothing more than spoiling Klopp's last year by winning the league instead, but I don't think that's probably going to happen.
I mean, anything's possible if you believe.
I mean, I know we're all rooting for City at this point, which is feels gross, but
yeah,
you know, if we have to make our peace with sending Klopp off with a title and to keep Arsenal from winning, and then that's just going to have to be our cross to bear.
It's goal number one is we can't let Mikel Arteta, who dishonorably disparages other teams' players, families, as he did against Porto today. We can't let this evil man.
It's a manager's family, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right. It was the manager. I'm sorry. No, anyway, Arteta.
Regardless, not cool.
I don't want.
Ange Postecoglou would never do that.
I just don't want them to win the fucking league this year. Like, yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, if we do collapse down the stretch, as long as we beat Arsenal and keep them from winning the title, I'm still fine with this.
It really all that needs to happen. Just like keep your powder dry for that game. I fucking hate that team. Yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be an interesting couple weeks. I was very pleased that for such a big match, we really came out all guns blazing and performed really not just well, but like it was a very mature performance. And I hope we see more of that down the stretch. You know, it would be nice if we could take it out on Fulham this coming weekend, who are, you know, doing well, but, you know, so was Villa. So, you know, we'll see. I feel like, you know, I've watched enough Tottenham over the years to, you know, not expect anything good this weekend, but here's hoping.
It'd be very like us to beat the team we have to beat in the six pointer and then blow it to Fulham. But yeah. This is a new Tottenham.
Yeah, let's beat the shit out of Fulham. Let's beat the shit out of Fulham. How about that? Yeah. Yeah, it would be nice. It would be very nice. So on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Ryan, where can people find you on the internet? Oh, you can find Brian muted.
Yeah, you can find me muted. That's actually probably what you should do with my Twitter, which is, by the way, @Brian_Ashlock. That's Brian with a Y.
You can find me on Twitter @Skipjack0079 and on Blue Sky. You can find me at Plain Old Skipjack. Don't forget to follow our podcast @WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. For Ben, for Brian, for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.